Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. We're your hosts, Matt and Sarah, and today we are talking to Siobhan Sana. She's leading a thriving community around the topic of SIBO. Did you know that SIBO is actually one of the leading causes of IBS? Well, you're about to find out so much more than that, so let's dive straight into the show.
Siobhan Sana, it's wonderful to be with you today to talk all things gut health, all things SIBO. You're the head of a wonderful, thriving community at SIBO SOS. You have 100,000 people that love you and listen to you talk about SIBO, so we're excited to learn as well. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. I know we have kindred spirits and definitely the same mission of helping people get well from the inside out and liberating them. And the whole thing SOS has come to mean save ourselves. So I'm thrilled to be with you, and hello to one and all. Let's get well. Oh my gosh.
Love it. So I understand that your background, your love for SIBO, well, a love for helping with people with SIBO didn't necessarily come from a place of thriving. You've definitely been through the hard yards yourself. Could you tell us your story about SIBO, what SIBO is, to start off with, I think would help, and how you got introduced to this concept?
Absolutely. And I'm going to do this very short version of it. But what SIBO stands for, small intestine bacterial overgrowth. And it's the number one underlying cause of another fabulous set of initials, irritable bowel syndrome, IBS. So I suffered ever since I was probably 5 years old with, you know, this inconsistent bowel pattern. And we used to, you know, joke about my Buddha belly, and we call it the Sarna belly. And just because I was a skinny person with a little bloated belly, and I didn't realize that that wasn't normal until, like, you know, got into slumber parties and, you know, staying at my girlfriend's houses and stuff, and then living in a sorority house in college. I'm like, okay, I am definitely not experiencing things the way my girlfriends are experiencing them. And what happened was, fast forward to a mold infested building that I've been working in for 20 years, and stress, a variety of other things, a lot of triggers just started piling up, and I ended up getting really, really acutely unwell. And I was on TV, TV person in the States for 20 years. And I was like, people were writing me like, oh, are you pregnant in Facebook? You're glowing. I'm like, no. So I was like strapping in this, you know, slimwear and the Spanx and just trying to, like, you know, batten down the hatches and really not feeling well on top of the usual not feeling normal and well. And I had never been to a gastroenterologist in my life. And I finally went, and it's a long story, but the first one I went to was about to retire. He was not up to date on the research. He was like phasing out. He was very good at scoping, but not like on the latest. And he told me to run 3 miles a day. Like, that was his advice. Like, if you really want to get things moving, nothing like running 3 miles a day. I'm like, I can barely move, much less run or even like walk 3 miles. And he gave me an antidepressant. And I was very confused by that. I was like, oh, he thinks I'm depressed. Well, I'm not happy, but I was a little confused. I think he was just trying to help my neurotransmitters, but which are primarily made in the gut, but it wasn't clear. Anyway, girlfriend at the TV station and I were talking, and she was the other weirdo there because she was also gluten-free. And so she's like, oh my gosh, I'm on this crazy antibiotic. I took this test where I like drank this sugar and then I blew into a tube. And like, we were passing in the hall, she was telling me, and I was like, huh, what? But I couldn't get it out of my mind. So I called her. I made her tell me words that she had to like email me because she couldn't remember them. It was a whole thing. Anyway, bottom line is, I asked this first GI doctor, could I please have a SIBO breath test? And I went to the University of South Florida and I sat in their office and I drank this lactulose, which is, I'll tell everybody what that is in a second. And I blew into these tubes for every 20 minutes for 3 hours. And I got a test result back and it was negative. I didn't really know what I was doing, but I was like, oh, okay, whatever it is, it's not SIBO, whatever that is. Fast forward, I still wasn't well. I was still quite ill. And a girlfriend of mine had gone to a gastroenterologist and she called him a digestion detective. And this totally turned me on. I was like, ooh, that's for me. And I fortunately got in to see him. He spent 2 hours with me for my first appointment, and we all know how rare that is. But he was totally determined to figure it out. And he's like, I really want to see that breath test that you did, the results. I'm like, I blew him off. I'm like, oh, it's negative. It's not that, which was part of my cynicism, which was, oh, nothing's ever going to make me feel better. And been there, done that, which I totally want to address anybody who feels that way right now. Please go back to beginner's mind. Please, 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 please. You need that so that you can see things with a fresh perspective and frankly be re-energized. Because when you have a chronic condition, as you both know, and your audience, your community knows, it's so draining and you have to have so much resilience and frankly, motivation, because motivation can be very easily drained by these situations. And then the cynicism comes in where, oh, you know, I might as well just eat this fill in the blank destructive food because I'm not going to get better anyway. So hang in there. But basically SIBO is the accumulation of bacteria that is normally in the large intestine, in the small intestine, which is not really supposed to have that much. It's quite sterile by comparison, which sounds crazy, but it's true. And when it overgrows in the small intestine, it creates, first and foremost, the most common symptom is bloating. Because those little bacteria and those microorganisms consume the food in the small intestine, leading sometimes to malnourishment even, and they ferment like a brewery, a microbrewery, and so all this gas is produced. It's either hydrogen sulfide, hydrogen, or methane, and it creates a variety of symptoms from, yes, the bloating, but also constipation or diarrhea or alternating constipation. So that is what SIBO is. My story is that that doctor that I wanted to see the test results that had asked me about it, he insisted, he wanted to see the chart, which tracked when this sugar substance called lactulose went through my intestines and how much gas was produced by the microbes in my gut from consuming it. So a year and a half later, you guys, I got the test result, the graph, and there it was, positive spikes. And in the bottom where it said negative, it said positive scratched out and the word negative. The person did not know how to read the chart. They did not know. So for 18 months, I had the wrong diagnosis. Okay. Sorry. I'm breathing. So I'm calm. Awesome. Anyway, that's please always get the graph. Don't just rely on a positive or negative. You have to see your test results. And I think that's wise for when you get an x-ray. Oh, you don't have a tumor. You know what? Can I have a copy of those x-rays? I'd like to see them, right? Because it's very easy to have those films or whatever the test result is get lost in the, you know, the cloud of the hospital or the lab. So please, just a little tip for me, always get your test results and keep the copies yourself.
Such a frustrating mm-hmm. story. And I think it's a story that it's not so different to a lot of people that get into this space mm-hmm. that they're sort of like on the wrong end of some bad diagnosis or some really bad detective work on the case of some of their trusted doctors, and they end up on this wild journey like you have been on. So thank you so much for sharing that. I'm curious though to fast forward to now, because like you've gone from that to now having a thriving community. You've interviewed some of the best doctors and thought leaders in the world on this actual topic. What have you seen from the success stories of people that you've worked through your community as the most effective protocols for treating SIBO?
Well, first of all, get tested, do a lactulose 3-hour breath test so you can really find out if that's what you have. SIBO symptoms do mimic candida and parasites. So that is super important. If you did the SIBO breath test back and you're negative, number one, make sure you did the prep properly. Number two, great, good for you. Maybe, however, it is candida or parasites. So please do explore that. And then also, if you ever do get a test result back that's negative from your SIBO breath test, but you still have symptoms, time to explore parasites and candida for sure. So the best protocols come from, number one, working with your diet to be a low fermentation diet, which will actually not cure SIBO, but does control the symptoms. So this is where it's interesting to have this condition, because it's part DIY, where you really can impact how you feel, and part either herbal or antibiotics or something called the elemental diet, which can be miraculous for people and has come a long way from tasting terrible to actually being quite milkshakey. That's a reach, but it's much better than it used to be. But I'll quickly explain what each one is. There's an antibiotic called rifaximin. The brand name in the States is Xifaxan. And it is what you would actually receive if you had traveler's diarrhea, or, you know, you're in a country where you drink the water, it doesn't agree with you, it has E. coli or whatever. And that was discovered by Dr. Mark Pimentel to actually stay in the small intestine. And what it does is, when it's a hydrogen producing bacteria, it addresses that. Then there is the combination of neomycin and rifaximin that addresses the methane. And the methane is usually constipation, whereas the hydrogen is usually diarrhea. Then, this is also different. You know, when you get sick and you take an antibiotic or can save your life, it's amazing. It's like one round of it. And this is the first time I took it. I thought, oh, I'm going to do this for 2 weeks and I'm going to be well. That's actually not how it works. It works by reducing the load, the bacterial load. So you might have to do maybe even up to 5 rounds of it, which feels very, very strange in the beginning when you're like, am I going to get a yeast infection? This isn't a good idea. You're supposed to only do this for 2 weeks. It is different. They have done studies to show that it is quite safe and it isn't systemic. The rifaximin part is not systemic. And also you don't become resistant to it, which is also super fascinating. It's really an amazing drug. And I don't say that lightly, because I realize so many of us want to be natural. So that's sort of the basics there. Then for the herbals, which were studied by Jerry Mullins, he actually did a study comparing the pharmaceuticals to herbals, which was great. And they found that they were maybe slightly more effective, but they did take a month instead of 2 weeks to get the same results. And those were combinations of like berberine, oregano oil, allicin, which is the garlic extract, like Alimax and Alimed Pro, I think that's right. Those are herbals that you can do to help and basically reproduce the effects of the prescriptions. The prescriptions can be hard to find affordably. I've been lucky, $10, God bless. Other people are paying $1,000. So all of a sudden, those herbs are looking pretty good. I'll take that extra 2 weeks for that kind of a payoff exchange. So those are some things that you can actually do, and that helps to reduce the bacterial load. Now, here's the other thing. Let's say you do the first round. It's important to do a SIBO breath test within 2 weeks after that 2 weeks of the antibiotics or the month of the herbals, because you want to find out, and this is all according to Dr. Allison Seebecker, who is my colleague and my collaborator in so many of my projects. This is one of her like big shout out from the mountaintops. You want to find out if the treatment worked, because SIBO mimics so many other things. If you see that it hasn't moved at all, then you may want to switch, right? You may want to switch from herbals to the pharmaceutical. You may want to look to the elemental diet. But if you don't test again, you could actually have a relapse and you won't even know that the treatment even worked or not. So it's really important for identifying whether or not you have an effective treatment. So that's one thing. And the third kind of treatment that you can do is that elemental diet, which is actually a series of amino acids that was originally designed for feeding tubes. And you can consume them, but the first versions of them were hideous tasting, like vomitous tasting. But there's some companies that have made it much more delicious and much more palatable. But that's the only thing you consume for two weeks to 17 days. So you are not taking in solid food. You are just doing the elemental diet. And instead of killing the bacteria through the herbals or the antibiotics, it's starving the bacteria in the small intestine, but it's still feeding you because it's so quickly absorbed into your body. So those are three of the treatments. And it's okay to kind of do a round of this, a round of that, a round of this, or just do one. You have to find what's going to work most effectively for you.
Great. Wow. Thanks for spelling that out. Awesome. You said before that SIBO, candida parasites, they can mimic the same symptoms. What symptoms are we talking about? I know for you, you had a bloated belly and you mentioned possibly some depressive symptoms, or was that just more discontent? But either way, what are some of the symptoms that could be experienced from SIBO and how, or parasites or candida, and how can you maybe tell the difference?
Well, I think that bloating can happen with all three of those. Food cravings can happen with all three of those. I think with parasites, you might be like, there wouldn't mix might not happen as much. You might be all diarrhea. I would think that that is definitely more probable in my unscientific assessment of that, because like Giardia, a lot of them can just lead to instantaneous, like constant diarrhea. But the other thing is, and of course, looking at your stool, if you see something floating around in there, that's, you know, chances are it's a parasite. But there's a website. Are you familiar with Para Wellness?
No.
Oh, you guys. Now, I know you're in Australia, and it is only in the United States, so I'm actually not surprised. But this is a parasitologist, something, you know, he's a professional parasite lab doctor who was in the military. And right now what he's doing is, in his retirement, he's running they call it a study, but it's really a lab. And you sign up, it's a membership, and I think it's just a technicality, kind of get around some of the regulations in the States. And he will look at the stool sample with like 1,000 slides. If there is something in there, he will find it. In the US, the para and ovum test that is typical at all the like sort of mainstream labs is highly unreliable. If it's positive, you have it. If it's negative, does not mean that you don't have it. But I really do love Para Wellness. They've been very, very responsive. They have great advice. The tests are not crazy expensive. Insurance doesn't pay for it, but they're not ridiculous. And then also, like, let's say they'll send you a report. This is what you have in trace amounts or in a lot. And even if you have a trace amount, chances are like a little goes, it's like a bug, you know, you see one, there are thousands. But they'll also give you a reduced price to retest on what you had show up in the lab report. So that's very cool. But he has a section in his website where, by the way, I don't know him personally, but I'm just, you know, been a customer. They have a section of what looks like parasites, but actually isn't. And it was so interesting, like citrus pulp can look like that if you're looking at it in your poo, and cheese, all kinds of stuff. So if anybody wants to go get grossed out, but for a reason, go check out the Para Wellness. I think it's like parawellness.org. If you're suspicious of parasites, I would definitely look at that. And of course, our friend Jay Davidson is an expert in it as well. And he has all kinds of great info.
That's right. Okay, great. So we have symptoms of bloating. Yeah. What else would you see in a potential SIBO patient?
You mentioned brain, and absolutely brain fog is definitely a symptom. I literally was slurring my words one day. I could not, you know what it's like, you can't find a word. Okay, that's fine. But to the point where you could not only not find the word, when I did find it, I couldn't speak it. And that was a very, very scary time for me. And I knew that I had to get super serious, because to have that neurological symptom, don't play. You're not playing. You know, it's one thing you have a bloated belly, too bad. This was serious. So there's definitely a brain-gut connection. There's can be B12 imbalances from the way that the bacteria interacts with B12, which is obviously a huge, huge component of our nutrients. And also iron levels. There are a lot of us who are low in ferritin or have anemia, and they do feel that there is a connection to SIBO. So those are some of the things that, you know, you have to put together the drip campaign, right? Here's a crumb here, here's a crumb there, and you create this view, this picture. One thing that is also really important is, have you been diagnosed with IBS, right? So if IBS is a diagnosis of exclusion, someone has said you don't have Crohn's, you don't have, thank God, you don't have IBD, inflammatory bowel disease, on and on, you have IBS. Well, what are you going to do about it, right? What do you do for IBS? You eat low FODMAP, okay, but that's not necessarily great long-term. There's controversy about that. It's difficult. And it, like, what is IBS? So this is the big thing, okay, you guys? This is what is irritating me like crazy. I am watching all these blog posts and all of these podcasts, and everybody's talking about IBS. I literally just watched something where three of these world-renowned experts and very smart people, they were talking about the cause of IBS and how difficult it is to diagnose it and all this. And I'm like, hello, Dr. Mark Pimentel at Cedars-Sinai has created a blood test to be able to tell if you have the number one underlying cause of IBS, which is, wait for it, food poisoning. So this is what I'm shouting from the mountaintops. This is what I talked about in my summits and in my docuseries, because everyone needs to know about this. And it was so frustrating to see these wonderful experts who I respect so much not know this. I'm like trying to figure out, should I message them on Facebook? Should I write them a handwritten letter? How can I do this without being rude? I don't care anymore. Everyone needs to know. Okay. So when you get food poisoning, sometimes we don't even identify it as food poisoning. Has that ever happened to you guys? Have either of you ever had food poisoning?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
We lived in Bali.
That's right. It was like a monthly occurrence for me.
Okay.
Still worth it to live in Bali.
So you have a good excuse because you lived in this beautiful location. For the rest of us, whether it is a trip or whether it is a, you know, perfectly legitimate, good reputation restaurant and it's a salad bar or whatever, one of the signs that I do want to mention is if you've ever been at a dinner table, everyone ate the same thing, you got sick, no one else did. And you're like, oh, it couldn't be food poisoning because Mona didn't get sick. Just want to put that in the back of your mind. Did you ever have the stomach flu or, you know, you had diarrhea for a couple of days, but then it went away and it was fine. And you just think, oh, it was something I ate. It could have been something you ate. So if you have had food poisoning and it's been E. coli, Shigella, all these different, prompters of this food poisoning, instigators, your immune system could have perhaps had the antibodies to that kick in, and it, through molecular mimicry, confuses your intestines so that it inhibits the motility by confusing, I'm being layperson's terms because I'm not a doctor, but I'm just telling it like it is, the migrating motor complex. The MMC, the migrating motor complex, is this sweeping wave in this, it's different than peristalsis, although the idea is kind of the same, but it's a sweeping wave of the traces of food particles in the small intestine that when that is not working, you will get SIBO. There you go. That's it. And it's because of the confusion of this antibody and the way that the small intestine and the ICC, the interstitial cells of Cajal. Sorry, didn't say that properly, but you get the idea. It's late where I am. Those are lining the inside of your intestines. And when they get confused, that's when the migrating motor complex can stop working. So there's this blood test. It's called IBS Smart. And it has fortunately traveled around the world. It is getting further and further around the world. It's not just in the States. And the test will tell you if you have the antivinculin or the CDTB antibody. And if you do, chances are you have IBS from food poisoning. That's it. I'm so excited I got that out. Because so many people are so confused. Even experts, they haven't heard of this test. Dr. Mark Pimentel at Cedars-Sinai, I believe he's going to be like, to me, he's totally like Nobel Prize candidate in my world, because he's just doing so many breakthrough research projects with his team at the MAST clinic there, the Pimentel Labs, which is also where they're even like playing with UV light internally for COVID in the lungs. Very interesting. Super interesting. Anyway, try to find this IBS Smart test. It's at IBS Smart Test or IBSSmart.com. And you get the blood test, you find out if you have these antibodies, and then you can tell if you may have IBS legitimately from that source. And then he says IBS and SIBO are basically the same, because if your migrating motor complex isn't working, then your bacteria can overgrow in the small intestine, leading to all this dilemma. Now, sidebar is that you can have SIBO from other things, adhesions, You can have it from endometriosis because it can pull, the tissue can pull the small intestine out of like place, so to speak, and that can inhibit the motion. Are you guys familiar with Ehlers-Danlos? Do you know what that is? Okay. Can you do this? Can you bring your thumb like this? Go ahead, do it. Can you do it? Sarah, you can do it. Like,
yeah,
Matt.
I have very flexible hands.
I don't know if you're left out.
Okay. Are you touching your sleeve, Matt?
Okay. Get that to the camera.
But Sarah, you're pretty close.
Yeah, I'm on it.
I need to
that bad? Thumb.
Well, I used to be like, look how cool I am. I'm a yoga teacher. Gumby. It's not great.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry, sister. But it's a collagen. It's a collagen. That's like, yes. It's a collagen disorder that's genetic. And you don't have it. I'm not a doctor. I'm just saying there's several things that they would test you for to see your range of motion, that kind of thing. But there's some people like Cirque du Soleil performers. Chances are they have it. They're not being held together with their ligaments and their tendons as tightly as some people. And what can happen is that there can be a laxity in the abdominal area and the placement of the small intestine can sort of get displaced. Like an adhesion could pull it, right? But with Ehlers-Danlos, it could be just like, again, not medical, but like it could smoosh down so that you don't have as much motility. And I don't have it severely, thank God. I have a mild case, but that can also be an underlying cause. There are a lot of things that could cause it, including opioids. So opioids slow down your migrating motor complex. So you could go have dental surgery, right? You're in anesthesia, that slows it down. Then you're on pain meds because you had your tooth extracted, that's slowing it down. And then you have food in the small intestine, your migrating motor complex might be impaired because maybe you had food poisoning a while ago, and that could be a triggering event. So there are a lot of things that are also signs to symptoms like rosacea, like restless leg syndrome. What? SIBO? That makes no sense. But they are showing to be connected. I know it's a lot, you guys, but this is bad.
No, it's great.
This is awesome. And I'm super curious because I know we have to wrap up soon as well. We're going to get going. It's late your time.
Yeah.
But what are some stories in your community? Just someone that's struggling maybe with SIBO right now. What are some cool stories that you've experienced with people and maybe some symptoms that they had zero idea was connected to SIBO and diagnosed and the treatment and what happens to someone's life once you treat this condition?
I'm so glad you're asking that. It just, you get your life back. Like, fix your gut, get your life back. You have clarity of mind. You can fit back into your clothes. You can perhaps gain weight because it can lead to being underweight often. Maybe you'll lose weight. It helps to balance your weight. You don't fear food, right? That is so big because food triggers these SIBO symptoms because the fermentation happens. And you feel like, truly, you feel like you get your life back. You know, I often say that it's not like a cancer, but it is a lifestyle killer. How many birthday parties, how many family celebrations that I had to like leave the table to go lie down and hold my stomach or, you know, just was so miserable. I'm wearing like, you know, tents of clothing just to cover myself. You, in a way you feel younger. If that makes any sense, because as we age, you two are so young, whatever, but the deterioration, it feels very draining. And then you start working out, you see your muscles, you're like, oh, I'm young again. It's kind of like that because you feel like yourself again, pre-SIBO. Now I've probably had it since I was 5. So I'm not saying I feel like I'm 4.5 years old now, but you get your energy back as well. You get the pep in the step. And I think it's very hopeful. Because you kind of like get that, the reverse of cynicism, which is enthusiasm and optimism and hope. And when you can reverse a condition like this, which it is reversible, it's really liberating. And it liberates a lot of energy in a positive way. Now, I do want to say that there's some times when you're not going to be able to resolve it because you have an underlying condition that is going to probably lead you to have SIBO long term. But people can even manage the condition and feel 100% better than they did with unmanaged SIBO. And that's true for so many chronic conditions. Management, I used to think I want, you know, I don't want to manage it. I want to have it totally resolved. And I appreciate that thought pattern, but that's a naive thought pattern. A realistic thought pattern is manage it and feel well. If you can't resolve it, just don't give up hope because you can still feel 100% better. And so maybe you do to manage it, maybe you do a elemental diet every quarter. Maybe you do smaller doses of the antibiotics periodically on a pulse. It's definitely manageable. Last but not least, for those of you who going to get the test and you're doing this protocol, make sure that you get on a prokinetic, which does stimulate the migrating motor complex, right? So if you don't know what a prokinetic is, ginger is a natural one. There are some drugs, you can just Google it. Resilor is one. It's Canadian. It's not in the States. In the States, it's called Motegrity, and it was just approved in the States. So there are definitely things that can help with the migrating motor complex. The problem is, here's one of the problems. If you don't figure out your underlying cause, you can have a negative SIBO breath test, but you will relapse. So you have to figure out your underlying cause. You have to get that migrating motor complex going with your prokinetic, and that can lead you to a lot more smooth sailing. So you're not, what's so cool, Matt, to answer your question about what it's like is like, you don't think about it anymore. Because otherwise it totally preoccupies you because you're always wondering, where's the bathroom? How long can I stay in the car? What's this date going to be like? You know, I got on the gear, the Spanx. Can I make it to the restroom? You don't worry about that, Matt. But this is getting freedom back. And also nutrition, because those bacteria eat your food. So that's another, just like, other than a philosophical energy, you get your physical energy back as well. And it does happen. It happens all the time in the Facebook group. People are misguided. They don't do the prokinetic. They don't do the antibiotics for long enough. They don't feel comfortable doing a second round because they don't realize that it's typically safe. So these are some of the blind spots we try to fill in the community.
Wonderful. So to summarize what we've learned, so SIBO, it's an overgrowth of bacteria in the small intestine, and it can happen because of which reasons? Again, Siobhan, we have food poisoning. We have possibly opioids, possibly, what were some of the other ones?
Adhesions from surgery or even just injuries, traumatic brain injuries. It doesn't have to be that you're, you know, in an ambulance and have been bleeding. It can be from a fall. It can be from just impacting the vagus nerve, speaking of the gut and the brain connection. It can be from, we said opioids. It's the endometriosis. Okay. It can be from that as well, because that tissue can pull and it's almost like an adhesion, and it pulls the intestines out of a position where the migrating motor complex can be effective. Diverticulitis, where in the pockets, the bacteria can hang out and never gets fully cleaned out. So that's another thing that could happen.
I'm curious, as we just finish up with someone that would be listening to this call and they're like, well, tick, tick, tick. So many people could be thinking that's me. What's your tips for finding the right doctor or the right professional to work with? Because obviously a part of the work that we do is to raise awareness, mm-hmm. and then we love to then send people to the right person. Do you have any suggestions for someone finding the right person to help them?
I do. There's a way to backward engineer. First of all, we have a speaker list at SIBO SOS. I'm sure a lot of the people you work with as well are SIBO savvy. But a backward engineering way to do it is to call some of these breath test labs, like in the States, Aerodiagnostics. I know there's an Australian SIBO breath testing lab as well. Dr. Narola Jacoby is in Australia as well, who's wonderful. And find out from these SIBO breath test labs who orders a lot of SIBO breath tests, and then go talk to that doctor, because obviously they're treating people with SIBO and testing for it. So that's one way to do it.
Okay, excellent. Wonderful. Great. Awesome. Thank you so much. This has been like a massive information dump.
Yeah.
I know it's going to help a lot of people. So many people struggle with this and have no idea where to turn. So I think hearing your story and hearing how you're like, you've been through that journey as well. You understand what it's like to be in that deep part of the valley with no answers and maybe no hope. But you got there in the end, and it's so cool to see you now have a thriving community of people that love and support you, and you've helped thousands of people, you know, get the direction and the help that they need, which I think is amazing. So thank you so much for the work that you do.
Oh, thank you all. Thanks for having me. This has been a long time coming for having these conversations. We're starting a podcast. I have one, but it's been on hiatus. Awesome. So I definitely want you two to come on board. And depending on someone's listening to this, Random House is my book publisher, and I just sent in a manuscript. So working title is Healing SIBO, and that should be out in the beginning of 2021. I can't believe I'm saying that, but I've had a long time of writing a book about this. Actually, that's how I started this whole project, is I was going to write a book and then realized it was hard. So I did. Because I'm a TV person, the summits and the docuseries were in quotes easier for me. So that's how I started it. And then I reverse engineered into the book. So thank you for having me.
It makes sense that so many people have followed you from your TV background, because you make complex things simple to understand and you're a great communicator.
Oh, thank you. Listen, take care, everybody.
If anyone would like to keep in touch with Siobhan and the great work she's doing, you can visit her website at SIBOSOS.com. So definitely check her out and all the work she's doing in there and all the resources she has, because there's a lot you can learn about SIBO. We've only been able to kind of skim the surface, but I know for anyone that struggled with IBS, there's definitely so many gems of knowledge you can pull from and keep diving into, because that was just such a great overview and foundation to build our exploration of SIBO. Thank you so much, Siobhan.
Thank you.